Empire of the Suns.
Suns.
Empire of the Suns.
Wet like on book. Wet like on book. Wet like on book.
Arizona Sports presents the Empire of the Suns podcast.
Empire of the Suns.
Hello there. Welcome to the Empire of the Suns podcast. My name is Kellen Olson, joined as always by Kevin Zerman for the second straight episode. We are recording live from Phoenix Suns Arena. If you hear rustling of sorts in the background, that is the court slowly being pitched up. We're talking towards the court in this one for the first time, so I wonder if people are going to start to hear us. That dude picking up trash on there can definitely hear me. I don't know if he's not looking at me. All right. Holy moly, Kev. Speaking of garbage to pick up off the ground, the Suns smoked the Nuggets. I spent, and I said this at the end of the episode, like, I wanted to give a lot of props to the Nuggets and the team that they are, and did not want to say, like, this series is over and give those types of vibes after one game. But it is hard not to, I don't want to phrase it that way. My hypothesis was confirmed, at least in the first game, that, boy, Kevin, are the Nuggets in trouble in this series.
I don't know what Mike Malone can do. I think people are going to look at what he said post-game, and they're going to say, this dude's throwing his players under the bus. But if you watch that game, I don't know what else he's supposed to do, because it is an effort thing to some degree. You know, smarter people than me were suggesting that the Suns were just getting them, their natural rotations just completely out of whack by what the Suns were running. And, like, look, the Suns were doing the stuff that looked really good. Like, everything was super crisp. But that team has a lot of flaws. We talked about it last podcast. And I just think it's catching up with them and leading to frustration. And when Aaron Gordon scores 6 points after it looked like he's going to play bully ball, that's just, Aaron Gordon's a role player, an elite role player, and it's just not happening right now.
I don't remember much of the game, Kevin, because the levels of decibels, whatever it is to measure sound in the arena, was the loudest it's ever been since I've started covering the Suns, without a doubt, in that fourth quarter. Probably the loudest point was when that wild child took his shirt off and went loco. That was cool. But that's my point, is that, and what I wrote is that in order for the crowd, and some people might think I was joking, I'm dead serious, the level of disrespect for a crowd to do the wave in the middle of a basketball game that is a playoff basketball game.
What point of that, so, like, fourth quarter was that?
If we're talking a late February game on a Wednesday night against the Chicago Bulls and everyone's just bored and we're doing the wave, then okay, we're doing the wave. But in the fourth quarter of a playoff game, to, like, basically celebrate that way, the way that the crowd was going after every... I'm not meaning to say that it was disrespectful and they shouldn't have done it. I just said the Nuggets should be embarrassed. Michael Malone said it was embarrassing that Will Barton looked like the only guy on the team that was giving it his all. And homeboy hasn't played in 7 weeks because of a hamstring injury, which, Kevin, is the type of injury that usually takes a while for guys to get going. And I thought that was unfair to Jokic, but certainly everyone else on the court. And it just, again, we had a first half, Kevin, if we want to break down the game more. Didn't feel like the Suns played all that well, and they were up 11.
I mean, Monty said it was maybe the best defensive half. His players, honestly, like, they were just like, no, we left a lot of guys open for three. And they were nitpicking themselves, which I think is a really good sign when you talk about not getting happy on the farm. To go back to your point real quick about the wave, though, that's like for D-backs 16th inning, everyone's bored to hell.
Delirious.
It is a little, like, bad if you're bored to hell about just blowing the doors off the other team. Like, that's bad news. I don't remember what you asked. I don't remember what we said. But that's basically the game. Like, we don't remember much because we were just like, yeah, this is bad for Denver. And I think what I'm trying to conceptualize is I think DA had a really good learning moment where early in the first quarter he gets in foul trouble, and that's the uh-oh against that Denver team, because he, you know, Jokic put Nurkic in foul trouble a ton in the Portland series. And then DA's fine, didn't even commit another foul once he just waited that off, played really well, relatively. And, yeah, I think that's the biggest thing to me. I'll also say Booker doesn't get enough credit for his defense, but even if you say he's guarding Facundo Campazzo and he's a lot bigger and more athletic, like, that looked important, and he was really engaged on defense, and no one's ever going to look at it and be like, oh, well, that was a great defensive performance on Facundo Campazzo. But I thought that's important. It sets the tone.
I said this a lot last episode. I'm going to repeat myself in saying, like, I really need to watch the game back to see, like, how good the defense was and all that type of stuff. I thought DeAndre started to somewhat get lost in the game.
Yeah.
In the first
half. No, he did. Yeah.
For the first time in a playoff game, like, look, in game six, like, he just wasn't a part of the game. He wasn't involved. But in this one, it looked like he was actively getting lost in it a bit and spiraling, sort of. Not all the way down, but sort of. Speaking of spiraling, to flush this game and use that phrase, that's not a delightful image. To flush this game.
It's accurate, yeah.
Yeah. So to flush this game from a Nuggets perspective, that's what you want to do, right? Let's just move on. But you want to move on because it was such a negative, and it was such like a... when Malone called out the team sort of in the first game, it seems like he barely called them out with how much he called them out in this one. I haven't watched it back yet, but seeing the quotes and everything, and all the Nuggets writers were telling us, like, oh, yeah, he just laid it into him. There was this, I don't want to call it a narrative because it was, that makes it sound like I'm trying to say it wasn't true. It was true that at game ones of series under Malone, they've struggled. And there was a lot of comparison made from the Denver side to game one of the Portland series. And then they really turned it around in game two and got back to the way they were playing. And they didn't do that at all in this series. I don't want to say I saw a defeated team, but I saw a team that understood they were the inferior team in this. They played like they were the inferior, and I think that it's going to be much different for them at home, but I think it was impossible for them to escape the reality of this series with the way the crowd was a factor in this game. Does that make sense?
Yeah. I mean, we talked about it. Mike Malone, even after game one, suggested, like, Jokic was kind of, what do you say, drained or tired mentally, all that kind of stuff, which is a red flag to me. How they played was also a red flag, but you could say they flushed game one, right? Like, I think that's a Cotton Fitzsimmons old adage where it's just like, yeah, a flush thing. But when you do it two games in a row, and I think it was in the third quarter, there's this moment where Jokic thought he got fouled or something. He's, instead of running back, talking to the ref, and then Denver went into a timeout immediately after that, and Will Barton got a tech. Facundo Campazzo was yapping at the ref or, like, being, like, freaking out about something. And it was just a moment where I was like, I think Mike's lost his dudes because they're just out
Jokic
of there.
Jokic pulled a Luka.
Yeah.
His transition defense was yelling at the ref.
Yeah.
And he made it more of a 4-on-5. Like, there's a way to yell at the ref while running back up the court, but he was, like, making sure to
he
take
slowed
his time
up to
yeah,
do
with,
so.
With the ref to leave it on a 4-on-5, and that's such an excellent point. It's like, that was the point where I thought the Nuggets just confirmed what we were all thinking, which is that this game is over, and the Suns are the better team in the series, and the way that they responded in that moment told a lot about the series. Our Australian correspondent, David Nash, spotted it right away. I tried to keep an eye out for it and saw it in bits, and then we saw it at the start of the second half. I wrote for my game two preview, we talked about in this one how Michael Porter Jr., man, was he not struggling defensively, but sticking out like a sore thumb, to use that adage. In the what I wrote tonight was that this series has so many solid, reliable two-way players in it. Like, if you just look up and down these rosters, and again, like, Denver's a team, they're the worst team in this series of the two, but you're talking about, like, Aaron Gordon, Campazzo, Barton, Morris, I'm struggling to think of other players on their team, which is part of the problem. Dozier's in the same way. I thought I had the box score open, so now I'm just hopeless, and this brain fart's just going to have to be the end of me. But Jokic is someone who's improved a lot defensively. Like, you look up and down the rosters, and it's really tough to not find a guy who is, like, legitimately, like, decent on both ends of the floor. Now, like, the levels Campazzo reaches as opposed to, like, Chris Paul in those areas, of course, is the difference. But Michael Porter Jr. is the one guy who's a big negative on one end, and he's a big negative on defense, and he came into this game questionable, and I thought I saw someone astutely point this out with Barton, but it actually turned out to be the case with Porter, where when Anthony Davis played that game on one leg, boy, did the Suns make sure to move it around and see how it was feeling, just to be sure. And what they did with Porter and his back and his bad defense was involving him in every action as much as they possibly could. And then when he was off the ball, it was going to be in a situation where, okay, you need to be able to tag DA at the right time and then still be close enough to your shooter. When the second half started, it was Gordon on Booker, and I think the Suns were ready for that. Or if they weren't ready for that, I think it was the first play of the game, a loose ball or whatever, and they're inbounding the ball. They called a sideline out-of-bounds play where Crowder was doing a dribble handoff, and Crowder very wisely held the ball as Porter just went way under that kind of handoff to cover it. Crowder had a wide-open three. Next play down, it's Porter having to tag on DA and recover to Crowder. He recovers way too crazily. Crowder gets an open three. Man, it was one of those moments where I was like, oof, like they can't win with him like that right now. And that's how I felt in both of these games. And I think the most definitive thing I can say from these two games is that the Nuggets need MPJ to be scoring at least 20 points a game, at least in this series, to make up for his defense, if you want to talk about offsetting, to a neutral point, Kevin.
Yeah.
And they need his offense to be a big plus for them. We talked about, and I tried to set the stage going into the series, like this was a guy who didn't play much in his rookie year because he was raw. And if you were wondering how that was the case when you see the talent that he has offensively, look at these two games defensively.
I don't know if it was Matt Moore or someone who covers or watches Denver at least a lot, like was wondering on Twitter out loud, like, should they just pull the guy? And it wasn't like an injury thing. It was like his defense so bad, his offense isn't even there. Like, you're talking about pulling the second leading scorer of a team that desperately needs him to overperform after the MVP, because that's how lacking their talent and just how their personnel is right now. And it's like, maybe you should just not play him because he's so bad on defense. So, I mean, you saw it in game one. You saw it even more tonight, where it's not only like Chris Paul ISOing him, but it's like this magical effect of Jay Crowder's like, oh, I think I'll pump fake, take a sidestep, and take a kind of off-balance three because I feel so good about Michael Porter Jr. flying past me. Like, it's just this aura of bad things happening to the Nuggets when he's around the guy shooting the ball. So even Mikal early on was taking him off the bounce. So, like, stuff like that.
Mikal could have made it way worse on Porter's resume, and he just missed corner threes.
And I have to go back to see who to blame on that. But if the Nuggets set out to stop the corner threes, they did a lot worse today.
Malone talked about it pregame,
too.
There were literally,
last game there were flare screens, and guys like Mikal would get a shot off over a guy closing out. Today, literally, it felt like half the court was empty and there wasn't a Denver guy even flying at him or within 10 feet.
Those possessions in, I'll have to look at that later. I was trying to pull up how many corner threes there were tonight, but he brought it up post game of game one. It was the first stat that he mentioned. And then pregame again today, he mentioned
contested.
Like he said, literally, like it is not the plan for us to give up this many corner threes. And they did it again in this game. Something you said brought to mind a conversation we had a lot back when this player was on the podcast. And by the way, we're going to create a new rule on our podcast because the Aaron Holiday rule, fist bump for that, brother. It didn't look good for us early on. He started to kind of play well, and then TJ McConnell just took all of his minutes. And the Aaron Holiday rule, by the way, if you watch a player in college and you don't think immediately that guy's going to be in the NBA, then that might be a bad sign for him being in. We never did that watching Pac-12 UCLA play. Shots fired at Aaron Holiday, I guess. The Rashawn Holmes rule, Kevin, is when your team is so lacking in good players that when a good player comes on the court and looks amazing, you're like, oh my gosh, good player, look at him go. Who'd the Nuggets get back tonight that looked amazing? Will Barton. It was like, oh, another good player for them. Look at... And not to
compare, can only play you like 15 minutes.
Of course, I'm comparing the Nuggets to a terrible, terrible Suns teams, but you get my point in terms of just... a real factor on both ends of the court and a guy that can just inject life into his team and just the difference another good player made for them. That is the Rashawn Holmes rule. I am anointing it as so.
I like it.
Right now.
Yes.
We saw it tonight with Will Barton, who was great. I've been a fan of his game for a really long time. It was good to see him play well. But I don't know. I want to say I don't know where Denver goes from here, but this is still a very long series. There's still a lot of it left. I know people are thinking about a sweep. The Suns chanted Suns in four at them, which is like, sweep is like the casual way of saying it. So the fact that they went to Suns in four, it felt even more offensive to me. I saw people, Kevin, I tweeted the photo. They like turned around facing the camera with their backs to the live action basketball game going on to take a picture with like 2 minutes left in the game. That's how over the game was. Like, hold on, let's get a photo. I've never seen someone do that during a meaningful game.
You know what's more offensive than Suns in four is Suns in three. So,
oh, did they chant that too?
I don't think so, but
someone
look
said
it up.
Someone was saying it.
Oh, if it's another blowout next game.
Yeah, I think this is still, taking it back to something that's going to be talked about in the next couple of days and is already being brought up. I think Mark Stein tweeted like something to the effect of like, remember when we talked about Phoenix's lack of playoff experience and that coming up. Congratulations to those people being right, but that is historically time after time. I mean, I spent 6 hours on Basketball Reference to show the fact that it was pretty much unheard of. If the Suns make the Western Conference Finals, which it looks like they're going to be the second team ever since they expanded it to 16 teams that makes it with three starters who are in their first playoff series and are under the age of 25. It's literally only happened only one other time since 1983-84. So yeah, it's kind of mattered, by the way. That's my 30-second rant on that out of the way.
Yeah.
To defend my position on that and my worry. The experience that they do have is Chris Paul's, and he mentioned not only do we know that Jokic is going to get the MVP trophy on that, and that is like the type of event.
Yeah.
For the Nuggets fans that can like remind them like, hey, here's our really awesome dude. We're still in a playoff series. Don't be so down in the dumps right now, which they won't be. It's the first home game for them in this series, but it's going to bring even more energy. We've seen that with Nash Knights here, of course, for him. And then he also mentioned that in 2008, when he was on the Hornets in the second round, they, in his words, beat the brakes off of the San Antonio Spurs in the first two games. And at some point, like, again, when they were looking up at the Jumbotron, seeing that kid losing his mind, in that kind of moment in those Hornets games, he looked over at the bench and saw every face over there just looked completely, like, unfazed, he said. Like, he remembered looking at Duncan and just seeing, like, those guys aren't rattled. The Spurs won that series in seven games. And Chris said it's just about one game at a time mentality. That's what we've been about all year. We're going to bring it up again. Having him as a leader is so important to this team, and I think he's going to I'm really not even willing to have the conversation about if this team is going to get complacent because I just don't think they will. It's a matter of how well they play now. That's going to get annoying where it's like if they don't play well, oh, is this complacency and all that kind of stuff? But I'm not there.
It feels like I mentioned this to someone else today that it just feels like we are this far into the postseason and we don't know what's going to doom them. If you had to pick something to doom the Suns, like, I have no idea what it is. You know what I mean? Like, it's not their bench not playing well, even though it hasn't really been great. It's not even the backup centers because they've survived somehow. Dario had a nice first half. He was fine in the second half, but he didn't score, whatever. I just don't know what's going to doom this team ultimately right now, and I think that's a good thing because I just don't see what their flaws are. You know what I mean? Like, I'm struggling to put it into words now because I don't know, and I'm trying to think of what can get them beyond bad injury things. So I that's why everything looks really promising, and I should probably cancel my vacation in July is what I was thinking the entire second half. But
it's rough.
It's a rough.
Good rough.
It's good. A good rough.
The vacuumer behind us is slowly moving more towards us, so I think we should probably end it there. We could break down a little bit more of the intricacies of this game. Hey, Torrey Craig was great again. Dario finally had a game where he resembled himself when he was good. A lot of different players played well. I mean, to end it there, who was the Suns' best player tonight? Was it Chris? I don't even know who it was.
It was Chris. 15 assists, no
turnovers.
DA, had, honestly, it was the worst quarter probably of the playoffs, but I think how he recovered was important.
Book was doing the right play thing every time still, even though, his assist numbers were down. Again, we brought that up first episode I did, where I was the number one uh-oh for me was that it took him a quarter and a half to be like, yeah, I figured it out. And then Denver, we were expecting a lot of adjustments from them. Whatever adjustments they planned were not executed well, which is something I talked about a lot with this team and something they were really good at. And apparently they aren't in this
series. I can't
even
tell what they were doing, so yeah. And I don't think that's me being dumb at basketball.
No, that's going back to what I said in the first episode from the series, which was that we watched a lot of really bad Suns teams try and execute things and had a failure to execute. And this is along those similar lines. It's keep comparing this Nuggets team to terrible Suns teams, apparently. But it was just a startling lack of execution from them. Obviously, Malone and that coaching staff is great, and the adjustments they've made we've talked about so much. But, yeah, we should wrap it up because you guys can probably hear that back.
Slow doom coming here.
And it's just getting closer and closer as we see the Valley Court slowly being disassembled. That was very loud. Okay, that was
the forklift's happening. You got to cut it.
Everything is lining up to me ending the podcast, so we will. We will be back after Game 3 on Zoom. No, we won't do it on the phone. We'll be on Zoom, but I'll be from Denver. I'm traveling,
Kevin.
Oh,
yeah.
Do you have any advice for me? I don't leave places often. I don't go on planes that much.
Just enjoy good food. I hear Denver is a good... Is it cold there? I don't know. It's a good outdoor, eats.
I get to pack a hoodie and wear a hoodie in June. As someone born and raised in Phoenix, Arizona, I'm not used to wearing a hoodie in June. So I'm very excited to just do that.
Well, at least you're prepared.
I will enjoy some basketball, too. Hope you guys enjoyed the episode. We'll be back next time as loud noises continue in the background. Goodbye.